It is Monday, August 1st, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump feuds with the parents of a fallen soldier. A prominent Chinese human rights lawyer is released from detention and denounces what she calls foreign forces trying to smear Beijing.
So actually, even though she's now released, it's kind of difficult to understand why she would suddenly appear on a televised confession.
And we learn which country music stars have racked up the big bucks this year. It's all ahead. The feud continues between Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump and the parents of a Muslim American soldier who was killed in Iraq in 2004. Ghazir and Ghazala Khan criticized Trump during last week's Democratic National Convention. Meanwhile, Trump said he had made his own sacrifices comparable to the soldier's death. Jeffrey Skelly is the media relations coordinator for the University of Virginia's Center for Politics. He spoke with me about the controversy.
Well, so far, pretty much every controversy that has involved Donald Trump, I think we can say it hasn't really had quite the staying power that many believed. I mean, you think back to during the Republican primaries, and you had him saying things about John McCain, and then his comments, even when he introduced the candidacy, about immigrants, and he's said a lot of things, and it hasn't hurt him so far. So I guess I'm a little hesitant to say that it's that this time around it's going to matter. But I will say that it's a general election context now, and this is sort of tapping into some sort of base American values, ideas, and I think you saw the Democratic convention, Hillary Clinton and her campaign tried to position their party as sort of the campaign of American values, sort of not even partisan, yes, but a little less partisan perhaps in sort of how they presented themselves. So I do think that the Clinton campaign is going to definitely try to use this, and I think the particularly overwhelming condemnation that you've heard from all corners of the ideological spectrum, both sides and in between, does suggest that this might be finally something that Trump has said that really could be costly in the long run.
Yeah, because Trump's vice presidential running mate, Mike Pence, issued a statement late Sunday where he said that he and Trump believe that the younger Khan, the man who was a soldier who was killed, he's a hero and families like his should be cherished by every American. Because certainly in the history of this country, any soldier that dies in battle or dies defending this country is highly regarded by the United States.
Sure. I mean, you saw Mr. Khan talking about in his convention speech, talking about Arlington Cemetery, and you can find headstones there symbolizing all faiths, and you can find people who have died who come from every possible background there and in other military cemeteries. So, to some degree, I do think you see Pence and you see Trump's campaign trying to, if not walk it back, trying to shift the focus from comments about this particular case to the general subject of radical Islamic terrorism. You've seen spokespeople for Trump's campaign trying to sort of turn it back to that conversation because Trump's campaign clearly thinks that that's an issue where they can make inroads, given the sort of the instability in the world, the worries people have. So from that perspective, you can see sort of what Trump's campaign is doing. The problem is that the early comments that Trump made on this and made about the family and what Mr. Khan said at the convention, it's going to be really hard to truly walk that back. And, you can imagine this issue hanging around and perhaps even coming up in the debates. And it really is an opening for the Clinton campaign.
Jeffrey Skelly, Media Relations Coordinator for the University of Virginia's Center for Politics. Well, joining me in the studio is social media editor Andrew Palshevsky. So how is social media looking at all of this?
Well, there's a lot of reaction. I mean, it's really started with Kazir Khan's speech at the Democratic National Convention on Thursday. We started talking about this really on Friday, or even Thursday night when his name started trending, and it's kind of carried through the weekend since. And one thing I was struck by is that a lot of the social media reaction isn't just coming from the left and from Donald Trump's opponents as far as people affiliated with the Democrats or Hillary Clinton. It's coming from some people on the right as well, from Republicans. John McCain, who has had some words with Donald Trump in the past when Donald Trump said that he, you know, didn't think he was heroic, despite the fact that he was a prisoner of war. He said that it doesn't give Donald Trump license as the nominee to say these things. And he said to Mr. and Mrs. Khan, he said, thank you for immigrating to America. Speaker of the House Paul Ryan, who is the highest Republican in the country, said that talk isn't tolerable, period. So very strong language that we're seeing from them and reflected on social media from folks on the left and the right. Now, Donald Trump is trying to use social media to strike back at this. He tweeted out and said, well, we're not talking about a heroic soldier. What happened 12 years ago, we're talking about Islamic terrorism today. So he's trying to use his social media account and his audience, over 10 million people who follow him, to try to rebut some of these things that have been going on.
And what else is trending?
Well, we also have from rapper Frank Ocean a very bizarre video that he's put up. Some background: Frank Ocean released a critically acclaimed album, Channel Orange, back in 2012. And ever since then, people have been waiting for his next album to come out. And he said about a year ago that he had completed it. It was called Boys Don't Cry. And he said he was going to release it in July of last year. Well, there's been about 8 or 10 different dates that have come up where people said, oh, it's going to be released today. And it's never happened. And then he releases this video online today, a streaming video of appears a man sitting at a workbench in a warehouse. It's a black and white video. It's kind of way in the distance, so you can't really see it all too well. But people really don't know what this means. They're wondering, does this mean that the album's going to be released? Is this, you know, his new way to kind of publicize it? We've seen a lot of artists do this where they leverage digital and social media to kind of create big buzz around an album release. So there's a lot of speculation that that's the case here. Although there's a lot of speculation, too, that maybe it's just a tease and the album's being pushed back even further. One person tweeted out and said, imagine this could be the greatest prank ever, that he never actually releases a second album.
Oh, wow. we'll remain to be seen.
Yes.
Well, thanks very much, Andrew. That's social media editor Andrew Pelshevsky. Here are some of the top stories trending. A Russian military helicopter is downed in Syria, killing 5. The U.S. strikes Islamic State in Libya. Shiite Hazara men are gunned down in Pakistan. And U.S. surveys show that Hillary Clinton regains an edge over Donald Trump after the Democratic convention. Expanded coverage of these stories are on the web. This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
The Apollo 17 mission to the moon and back in December 1972 was the last of NASA's Apollo missions to fly in space. 9 of the 16 Apollo missions sent trios of astronauts beyond Earth's orbit into deep space and away from the protection of Earth's magnetic shield. A new study is suggesting a link between deep space radiation exposure and cardiovascular difficulties. The study by Florida State University's Michael Delp finds that 3 of the first 7 deceased lunar astronauts died of a cardiovascular-related problem. Delp says another part of the study conducted with mice also shows that deep space radiation is harmful to vascular health. The study is of particular interest to NASA and other space agencies who are planning manned missions to deep space destinations such as Mars. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, we'll hear how country music stars are making money. Turkish special forces have captured at least 11 fugitive commandos who are allegedly involved in the failed July 15th coup aimed at capturing President Recep Tayyip Erdogan and the southwestern resort of Marmaris. Their capture comes after Mr. Erdogan issued another state of emergency decree, dismissing nearly 1,400 more members of the armed forces and tightening civilian control of the military. The post-coup attempts A crackdown has so far resulted in tens of thousands of soldiers, police, judges, civil servants, and academics being fired, suspended, detained, or questioned over the past 2 weeks. Ambassador James Jeffrey, formerly posted to Turkey and now a distinguished fellow at the Washington Institute for Near East Policy, tells International Edition's Victor Beatty, this was a very serious coup attempt, but one has to separate the failed coup from Mr. Erdogan.
Much of what Erdogan does is very troubling, and it is perfectly reasonable to attribute motives to him that would not be the motives of an American president. That said, this was a coup against a democratically elected government and president that was extraordinarily violent. I've lived through several coups and quasi-coups in Turkey. Nobody has seen anything like this. A significant part of the military was involved, an indication that they were a part of this Fethullah Gulenist cult-like movement. And you're going to see a very drastic cleansing of government organizations in the military. That's to be expected.
Does this have wide support?
Yes. All of the political parties have backed Erdogan. They have issued warnings, particularly the opposition party, the Republican People's Party, in Turkish it's SHP, has warned that they're suspicious of what Erdogan might be doing, and they have every right to make that warning because there's considerable indication that he has used his powers in ways that are not conducive to democracy in the past. But that said, almost everybody in Turkey and almost nobody outside of Turkey believes that this was A violent coup. I mean, that's a fact. And B, Turkey, which is basically an indication of Erdogan's unpopularity and the inability of people to accept facts, and that the Gulenist movement was behind it. That's not so far a fact, but it is a pretty good assumption. So that's the problem we have, because there's great skepticism, but sometimes people who are not doing what we would like them to do wind up in very difficult situations where they have to act, and that's where Erdogan is now.
Well, of course, the U.S. is in somewhat of an awkward position, playing host to Fethullah Gulen, the exiled Muslim cleric that you referenced. Was he behind this coup? He insists that he opposes coups and was not part of it.
From my own experience in Turkey up to 2010, he certainly was behind earlier attempts to infiltrate government infrastructure and bureaucracy and to use the people that he's infiltrated to shift government actions, particularly the judiciary and to a lesser extent the police, to support his movement and its goals rather than to do their job. That I do know, and I do know that the government has rounded up a lot of evidence. The Gulenists were behind it, including a lot of confessions. I haven't seen hard evidence beyond the confessions of this. What I will say is there is a Gulenist movement in Turkey that has infiltrated at least the civilian side of the bureaucracy to a significant degree. And some movement was behind this coup. This was not the military leadership as in the coups in the past.
Ambassador James Jeffrey, formerly posted to Turkey and now a distinguished fellow at the Washington Institute for Near East Policy. Prominent Chinese human rights lawyer Wang Yu was released Monday following more than a year of detention. But her release was accompanied by a video in which she distanced herself from her prior legal work and denounced awards from the United States and Europe for her human rights activities. I spoke with Patrick Poon, China researcher for Amnesty International, who's based in Hong Kong, and asked him to describe Wang's video.
I mean, like what we saw in the video was kind of strange because, like, in it, like she said that she was released on bail very recently. And what it means in China, release on bail means that you still will be subject to restrictions for 1 year. And then actually, she can still be prosecuted, you know, if the investigation would be done again. So actually, even though like she's now released, it's kind of difficult to understand why she would suddenly appear on a televised confession, saying like what, you know, things that she worked with her colleagues with something like hurting China. And also claiming like also she doesn't really want to get all the human rights award abroad. It's something like it's too much, you know, intention to say something like particular on that. And also it's something like it's really not logical at all for someone to do an interview like that right after being released.
Which media did she speak to?
Well, originally like what we saw is from Hong Kong newspaper Oriental Daily's website. Released that video, And then later, also saw the video was released on two news websites. One is the paper, and the other one is iPhone. So, like, both are not the type of mainland media, this official one, CCTV, that we used to see other televised conventions of other detained activists in the past. So it's something like a new phenomenon that we don't quite understand why suddenly Hong Kong media is also getting involved as well.
Now, I believe her husband has been jailed as well, and he's also a lawyer.
He himself also deal with some human rights legal cases, but still actually no news about him at all, whether he has been released as well or not, and also whether, you know, their son is free as well. It's kind of unclear. And so it's something like still very much worrying also to other detained lawyers and activists. It's still unclear what will happen to them, because there has been some rumor that there would be a trial of Wang Yi's former colleague Zhao Shifeng and three other activists today. But it seems to be not happening today. But it's according to the report, the video suggested that tomorrow may be happening, the trial will be happening tomorrow. So it's kind of, you know, very unclear at the moment what will happen to other human rights lawyers and activists. It's still it's like a mystery.
Yeah, and I believe there's been concerns about, in this video, there have been concerns about Wang Yu's appearance, saying that her face looks sort of puffy.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, like, and also she mentioned that she got breast cancer. I mean, like, there's something many of her friends and lawyers are worried about her health, because it's really unclear what happened to her during her detention and why she looks so, I mean, like, her face kind of looks swollen. So why is so all sudden that she mentioned all things that actually not so comprehensible to her friends and lawyers? And also her health is really a big concern to many.
Patrick Poon, China researcher for Amnesty International. This is VOA.
The U.S. presidential election takes place on November 8, 2016. VOA provides extensive coverage of this important political event. Who are the candidates, and what are the issues that will determine who the next president will be? Tune in around the clock for coverage of the U.S. presidential election right here on VOA.
Hi, I'm Nikki Strong. You love music? How about Blake Shelton and Carrie Underwood? Or Merle Haggard and Loretta Lynn? Experience the best in country music on Country Hits USA. I bring you some country rock, outlaw, a little hillbilly, contemporary, and more, with a dash of entertainment news, too. So join me for Country Hits USA on VOA 1, the voice of America.
So who are the highest paid country artists of 2016? The Forbes magazine annual list has been released, and Nikki Strong of VOA Music is here to tell us who are country music's cash kings and queens. Nikki, how is this Forbes list compiled?
Okay, well, it's all pre-tax money from June 1st, 2015 to June 1st, 2016. It's compiled based on record sales from Nielsen, concert tour ticket sales from Polestar, and earnings from non-musical ventures like endorsements and entrepreneurial endeavors. And fees for managers and agents and lawyers are not calculated. So,
well, tell us, who are the top five?
Okay, well, Garth Brooks is number one again, earning $70 million this year, more than any other country act in the world. His comeback tour is still in full swing, with more states and more shows being added and possibly more international dates going into 2017. And I think it's important to note that Garth's ticket prices are very affordable. So they average under $75 for all seats, where his counterparts charge like easily $100 and more. So I think that's very interesting. So if you love country, you cannot not afford to check him out. And he's also about to launch his own SiriusXM satellite radio channel later this year. So he's gotten a lot of money from his touring. Number two is Kenny Chesney with $56 million. He's gotten that from touring, endorsements, and his own Blue Chair Bay Rum. He actually has made the same amount as Justin Bieber, by the way, and $2 million more dollars than Beyonce. Interesting to note. Luke Bryan is number three with $53 million. Via touring and endorsements. Number four is Toby Keith at $47.5 million. He rakes in a killing off of his restaurant chain and other non-musical ventures. And Jason Aldean rounds out the top five with $36.5 million. And he, by the way, was the first country artist to invest in Jay-Z's title.
Well, now, who are the top women earners?
Okay, so you would think that Carrie Underwood would top the list, but she doesn't. It's actually the legendary Shania Twain. Shania is number seven with $27.5 million due to the success in large part of her residency in Las Vegas. So just doing a show. She's making tons of money. I'm like, go Shania. Then it's Carrie at number eight. She's close behind with $26 million due to her tour and her new Kalia fitness line. Dolly Parton is number 13. Go Dolly. She's at $19 million from her varied empire that includes the Dollywood theme park. And then Miranda Lambert tops out the list, the top 15, at $18 million, which she made from touring and her business ventures like Red 55 Wine and Pink Pistol. Now, I think if she drops a new CD this year, that amount will easily skyrocket and increase her ranking. But again, that's June. I was like, if she hasn't dropped her album yet. But I think as far as the whole year of 2016, when she drops that album, her earnings will skyrocket. And if you are curious, she just made $6 million less than Blake Shelton, who actually ranks at number nine with $24 million. But overall, I had learned from looking at this list that artists with the highest profiles or the biggest brands don't necessarily translate into being the biggest earners.
Very, very interesting. Well, you can hear music from these top-earning country artists on Country Hits USA with Nikki Strong on VOA 1. You can also reach Nikki on social media at VOA underscore music on Twitter and VOA Music on Facebook. Thanks, Nikki.
You're welcome.
Looking back on the memory of the dance we shared beneath the stars above.
The music of Garth Brooks brings us an end to our show. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks so much for joining us.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
In late July, Secretary of State John Kerry and the foreign ministers of Cambodia, Laos, Thailand, Myanmar, and Vietnam met in Vientiane, Laos, for the ninth Lower Mekong Initiative ministerial meeting. The Lower Mekong Initiative, or LMI, was launched in 2009 to narrow the development gap between the five Lower Mekong countries. The initiative focuses on six areas: agriculture and food security, connectivity, education, energy security, environment and water, and health, as well as issues related to improving gender equality. As Secretary Kerry has said, at the heart of the Lower Mekong Initiative is one concept, sustainability. This is particularly important today, as the entire region suffers through the worst drought in nearly a century. According to the U.S. Geologic Survey's chief scientist for climate and land use change, the Mekong region is among the most seriously imperiled regions on the planet. It will almost certainly see more intense dry seasons, wetter monsoons, floods, storms, and rising sea levels. We need to heed these warnings and act accordingly, Secretary Kerry said. Since we began this project, we have explored ways to cooperate, to share information, and address the full range of water, energy, and food security challenges that we face. Responding to these continued challenges, this year the LMI ministers meeting in Vientiane formally launched a sustainable infrastructure partnership to improve regional infrastructure planning and performance while mitigating environmental impacts. The Mekong River is the economic lifeblood of the entire region, and it helps to enrich lives, it pays the bills, fills the stomachs of more than 70 million people. It's also a priceless center of biodiversity, Secretary Kerry said. We have learned that wherever we have a fragile ecosystem supporting a regional economy, you need a strategy that nurtures the health of both. and you require all of the regional components of that ecosystem to share in responsibility.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at www.voanews.com/editorials.